This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks to everyone for listening in today. This is WNRN, Community Independent Radio. And that's one of the reasons, because we are community and independent, is why we can have two guests on today to talk about medical marijuana. Not everybody can do that in our area. We have Mary Lynn Mathry and Al Byrne, the founders, correct, of Patients Out of Time. Good morning. Maybe I should turn the volume back up. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Rick.
I didn't want people to hear you dance into the bluegrass. I don't know why. Rusty would have appreciated that. I saw Al over there sort of getting into his groove.
Good sound.
It is a good sound. It's one of my favorite parts about doing the show is coming in to get set up and getting to do it with a good flow from bluegrass. But again, we are talking about medical marijuana. Mary Lynn Mathry, Al Byrne, they are the founders of Patients Out of Time. It's a local group, right? You're down in Howardsville. Mm-hmm. And is it one of the first groups?
Yeah, we are sort of unique. We're located in Howardsville. That's our national headquarters, if you will. But we are a national organization. We're a 501c3 educational charity, so your tax deduction can be taken out by giving us a donation to Patients Out of Time. And what we do with that donation is that we presently, and have for now 19 years, since 1995, educated the U.S. medical doctors and nurses in the therapeutic uses of clinical cannabis. Unfortunately, we are the only such organization that has been able to offer these accredited courses. We have recently found out that after taking a survey of all 159 U.S. medical schools, that no one in the United States in the medical school community offers a course on the medical uses of cannabis or on something that we'll discuss a little later, the endocannabinoid system that has been discovered in all living creatures except insects. We are the only organization that does it. We're very proud that we do it, but we are very worried that we're the only ones that do this work.
And I can understand the worry, but are there any explanations as to why, in 19 years now for Patients Out of Time, 19 years, certainly I think many people would say that the feelings toward medical cannabis are starting to shift towards greater acceptance. So why are you still at the point where out of 100 and, what did you say, Al, 150, 159 medical schools, not any one of them are teaching it in the method that you are?
Well, that's true of the nursing community as well.
Yeah, I think it's quite amazing. And you're right. When we started, we thought it was about 20% of the American public got it, that cannabis had medical value. And we do call it cannabis as opposed to marijuana. The marijuana prohibition starting way back in with the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937, they specifically used that name to create the hysteria about a new drug. And at the same time, cannabis was a very popular medicine. So this whole prohibition was based on lies and greed.
What we're going to say about that is that the cannabis plant is a plant. And it is known as the cannabis plant, not the marijuana plant. The marijuana plant, as Mary Lynn says, is sort of a made-up name. It was stolen from Mexican slang. It's a derogatory term, and we choose not to use it. And as Mary Lynn said, when we started this issue, about 20% of the American public thought therapeutic cannabis was real. Now it's about 85% of the American public thinks it's real. So there's been a huge, huge shift in opinion, and that opinion has changed based on education and knowledge. What we have amassed as an organization with others obviously helping us, is some 100,000 pages of peer-reviewed science worldwide. And I'm talking worldwide. Cannabis is used as a medicine in 26 countries as we sit here and talk. Really backward places like Canada and Australia and France and Spain. And when the United States talks about there's no science, what they're saying is there's no U.S. science, and that too is a lie. There's plenty of U.S. science. And all of the science indicates that cannabis is a good medicine used, the plant is a good medicine used that way. It's a good food used as a food, and it's a good plant for known as hemp for a multitude of human uses. So that, yeah, Rick, the attitude has changed, and the change is based on education, and we're proud to have provided most of it.
But what hasn't changed is the intimidation by the federal government. There's still a, you know, the prohibition of cannabis is alive and well. The DEA is still going after growers, still threatening, still very intimidating. So, you know, we now sit with 20 states that have medical cannabis laws. We have two states, Colorado and Washington, that have made it legal. Come January in Colorado, the sale will be available for anyone over 21 years of age to purchase cannabis for their own personal use.
But when you talk about those two, now, and I'll come back to this, but now you're talking about the recreational use of it, not strictly the medical use like the 20 that you mentioned a moment
ago.
That's correct.
Right, different thing. And good and bad, you know how people think about that. But the medical, Al and I have a real hard time with all these laws that they're passed because they're passed by legislators. You know, we kind of say it's like they're practicing medicine because they start putting on these limits, how much a person can use, where they can get it. In Michigan, there's an argument about you can't use oils, tinctures, which are the real medical value when someone's really sick, say cancer or seizure disorders, you want to concentrate. But some of the states will ban that. They put ridiculous limits on. They decide which conditions a physician could treat. So the laws in every state are different, cause a lot of confusion. The legal, which is going to be there for recreational use, to an extent, a lot of patients are looking at that to say, well, I'm going to go use it, and then I'm going to go purchase it there in Colorado, and I can use it the way I feel I need to, or I can get it for my child. Many of the states don't allow children to use it. I'll take this opportunity, if people have not seen the CNN special by Sanjay Gupta on August 11th, that's available on YouTube to watch, and I think that's a real eye-opener. Finally, we've got a mainstream medicine doc who said, hey, I finally looked at the science. I've been duped by the federal government.
Right. He changed his mind, Dr. Sanjay Gupta from CNN, why I changed my mind on weed. But Marilyn, again, our guest today, Al Byrne, Marilyn Mathry from the locally founded national or maybe global organization, Patients Out of Time. You mentioned how doctors are individually, and nurses, Marilyn, also a registered nurse, are sort of changing their mind about it. But then you have 159 medical schools who are not teaching about it. So what I'm hearing is the individuals are being taught, but the organizations, the larger the group, the harder it is to have them change their thoughts on it.
You got to remember, back in the 1800s, doctors wouldn't wash their hands before they did operations. They are a really recalcitrant troop here. The other thing that I'd like to say about the medical community, and you can call me up this morning if you want, because you're not going to like what I'm going to tell you if you're a medical doctor, is that as medical profession of the United States has abdicated their authority and their responsibility to the lawyers and cops of this country by letting the lawyers and cops of this country decide whether this is a medical issue or a legal issue.
Well, that sounds like a great time to give out the phone number for the day, 434-979-0919, to talk about the topic of medical marijuana, or preferred term here today, medical cannabis, its use in a medical format. Al, you say that. What makes you say it?
What makes me say what?
The doctors are giving up their authority and their.
I'm saying it. That's fact. That's what I see every day. That's what everybody sees every day. When Marilyn and I go to testify about the uses of clinical cannabis, what we're testifying in front of is a bunch of lawyers. They've never spent a minute in nursing school or medical school, and they have the audacity to sit up there and make like they know what they're doing. I've asked several of them if they could spell endocannabinoid. They don't even know what it is. And yet they have a system in their body that's full of endocannabinoids. And they want to make a medical decision based on their law school degree. I think it's preposterous. And that's what Mary Lynn and I are talking about here. We've got states all over the country where some states say you can use cannabis clinically for pain issues. And other states say, no, you can't. Some states say that you can use cannabis for post-traumatic stress. Other states say, no, you can't. Now, these decisions to use it or not use it, none of them were made by doctors or nurses. Every one of them was made by a lawyer. When my dog is sick, I take him to a vet. I don't take him to a lumberjack or somebody that fixes cars. And I don't understand how the American public can just stand for this. It's just damn stupid.
Well, and the way things are changing now, it really is patient-led when it comes to medical cannabis. This is a patient-led issue. Great for patients, but really sad, again, for why aren't healthcare professionals looking at the science? And once you see the science, what we say about cannabis, we should get into the endocannabinoid system, but that's a new discovery, and yet not so new. 1988, we found out we have receptors in our brain for these chemicals called cannabinoids, which at the time we only knew about them as a group of chemicals found in the marijuana cannabis plant. Well, 4 years later, 1992, scientists discovered we make a cannabinoid called anandamide. Now we know that we've got receptors not only in our brain but throughout our body. We make various cannabinoids. This system keeps us in balance. It is what protects us from all sorts of stressors, whether it be physical or mental trauma, emotional trauma. But it could be an injury. It could be an infection, bacteria, whatever. This system protects us from all of that. And to an extent, it depends on what we eat. We are what we eat. We've also forbidden the food coming from the cannabis plant. So we're keeping all of us from eating a very, very beneficial food. And then when our body is not working up to par, we don't even allow people to take the medicine that could help it. Just like a person whose pancreas is not making insulin anymore. The patient goes on insulin to keep a normal life. Or somebody whose thyroid gland isn't working any well, we give them Synthroid to keep them functioning. Well, in this case, if our endocannabinoid system isn't working well, we get really sick. A lot of our autoimmune diseases now, we think, are a result of a deficiency in this endocannabinoid system. A lot of age-related illnesses are because, literally, it's pooping out on us. And if you can supplement it with cannabis and or feed ourselves, not only hemp seed oil, but the leaves of the cannabis plant, if you juice those leaves, it's like eating a super vegetable. You know, mom says eat your green leafy vegetables. Well, this is one of the most nutritious green leafy vegetables you could eat. And by taking it in a raw form, there is no psychoactivity. It's clearly a food.
Do you think that this push for recreational use, that's certainly part of the conversation, and we talk about two states, Colorado and Washington, having I guess, I don't know whether they put forth a law or took away a law, but it's now acceptable. It's legal to use marijuana/cannabis for personal recreational use. Is that helping or hindering the goal of making it cannabis accepted for medical use?
That's a real good question, and I think the verdict is still out. Recreational use of cannabis and the medical use of cannabis are really two different issues. For one thing, as Mary Lynn indicated before, medical use, especially for serious problems like tumors, say a cancer tumor, takes an extraordinary dose of the cannabis plant to negatively affect the tumor, which it does. It can make the cancer cells that live in a tumor die. That's one of the main functions of the endocannabinoid system and the some of the compounds within that system. If you're using cannabis recreationally, the dose that you're going to use is what we all expect everybody to use, share a half a joint with a friend or something, and that's a recreational use. But just so to be clear, now we also have on our board of directors four individuals who are patients who receive their medical cannabis on a monthly basis from the United States federal government, which says that there's no medical value. The dose, for instance, for Barbara Douglas, who is an MS patient in Iowa, is 8 cured ounces of cannabis per month. That's correct. 8 ounces a month for Barbara. This is a similar dose for Elvie Masika, who uses cannabis and gets her cannabis from the federal government for glaucoma. So dose is important, and to answer your question, I think it muddies the waters, and I think that really the problem we have with cannabis laws, again, is they're made by the wrong people, and they're doing the wrong thing. We have about 500,000 drugs available to us, Rick, over-the-counter drugs all the way through prescription drugs, about 500,000 of them. And we have a system for that. It works pretty good. We have pharmacies, and we have drug stores, and we have pharmacists and doctors and nurses, and they all interface with these 500,000 drugs very well. And then they want another system for one drug, one plant called cannabis. It's ludicrous. We put cannabis, the medical cannabis, tinctures, potions, edibles, all of the different types of cannabis products that are now available to us. We put that into the system that we have now. We schedule that those cannabis products at about 4 or 5, which means they're over the counter, and life will go on very well.
A quick question for those folks, and I'll include myself, who can't put a picture of 8 ounces, where you say about 8 ounces of cannabis for the month for the your woman on the board of directors dealing with multiple sclerosis.
Right.
So let's and I need to take a break, but let's chat briefly about, you know, help me understand what that qualifies as. How many joints is that?
About 300.
So 300 joints in a month.
300 for the month. Yeah, a lot of them smoke about 10 joints a day.
Now that sounds a lot.
They smoke about 10.
But it's really low grade stuff.
If they had better quality, they could. First of all, if the government would change the method of delivery, they would have a better product. They wouldn't be smoking it, and they certainly wouldn't use so much.
And I think even the doctors and nurses who are pro medical cannabis would say that smoking it is the worst way to take it, correct?
Yeah, they would, and we can talk about that. But you know, the other thing about the medicine that they get, they've gotten medicine that's 15 years old at times.
From our government.
10 to 15 years old.
You mean like, harvested and just sitting in somebody's locker for that long?
Yep. So, I mean, it's old, but you're right. The smoking, actually, long-term effects of smoking are not that harmful. The cannabis more or less undoes the harm from smoke. But again, healthcare professionals would advise people, if they needed onset really quickly, to vaporize, to heat it, where you get the effects of the vapors, but no burning, no smoke.
All right, 11:17 here on the Wake Up Call. We're talking with our guests today, Al Byrne and Mary Lynn Mathry from the organization Patients Out of Time. We'll be glad to take your calls, your questions, although I have a whole bunch, 434-979-0919.
WNRN thanks the following for their support of independent music radio.
T&N Printing, serving Virginia since 1982. In addition to printing and copying, T&N specializes in construction document management, as well as dry mounting, binding, and mail services. T&N offers FSC-certified printing, an internationally recognized standard for production and consumption of forest products. T&N Printing can be reached at 434-971-8976 and t-nprinting.com.
Millwork for Less, the exclusive supplier of wood entry doors for Craig Builders. Millwork for Less builds doors for homeowners and builders all over North America. You can find their online store at millworkforless.com.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And this is Rick Moore from WNRN with my guest today, Marilyn Mathry and Al Byrne, talking about medical marijuana, or the preferred term from patients out of time, medical cannabis. We already talked about marijuana somewhat being a slang. It sort of has its pejorative use to it. So let's talk about the ethics involved for a doctor or a nurse. Especially in doing my homework, a nurse has some incredibly high percentage in positive voting on the job that they do. And Mary Lynn, a registered nurse, because of the, I'm assuming because of the closeness that goes along with that from the patient to the nurse.
Probably year after year, nurses have been voted the most trusted profession by the American people. And yeah, we spend the most time with patients. We can get very intimate with them, with, you know, making sure they can, all bodily functions are functioning well, or we have to assist them with many of them. But yeah, so we're in a very close position with them, and we're the ones that are often dispensing the medications and teaching them about safe medication use. And I look at cannabis as such a savior for nursing and for patients, thinking of it's a wonderful natural way to help people sleep, takes care of nausea and vomiting, stimulates the appetite, takes care of pain without drugging them to the point that now we have to worry about them falling because they're not thinking clearly or not able to move clearly. Helps with spasticity. So many of the things that keep us running crazy in hospitals, trying to make sure we can get all the meds to the different patients and making sure we get the right medication to the right patient, because if we mess up, we could do some serious harm to someone. And here's cannabis. Never, no death ever from cannabis.
It's still not legal.
It's still
so
not legal.
So how does the nurse, who has this incredibly high rating in terms of trust, how does the nurse, who can lose her job,
exactly,
how does a nurse promote this medication when it's not legal? What's the talk about the ethical balance there?
It's a huge dilemma. And back in the 80s and 90s, I pushed and pushed for the American Journal of Nursing to let me get an article out there about the ethical dilemma for nurses. We know it's helpful, but it's against the law. What do you do? Well, fast forward a little bit to 2003, the American Nurses Association did pass a resolution recognizing cannabis does have medical value, supporting patients' right to access to this, supporting nurses' right to talk to their patients about it. So a lot of this is, the, you know, to an extent, the First Amendment. They do trust us. And at UVA, I would do the same thing. There I was working at the University of Virginia as the addictions consult nurse and seeing patients with drug problems. And often they might tell me that they use cannabis. A good example would be someone who had an alcohol problem. They were able to get off their alcohol with the help of cannabis. And historically, this has been used. Cannabis has been used to help people with problems like that. But they've used that to get off that, and they're up for a liver transplant or something. And so I'll have to go back to the physician and say something like, you know, I think they're going to be fine. I recommend that, you know, the transplant, et cetera. They do use cannabis. Could you just not test for that? Just, you don't need to know. But in talking to the patient, that's the first thing I'll say. You know, it is illegal in this state, but if you were to use it, and then try to give them some safe guidelines about it. But I think more important is what Patients Out of Time did years ago is we realized that this was a scary thing for a lot of healthcare professionals. You could lose your license, you know, if found that you used it, and you could lose your job if you talked about it too much. Those threats are real. So we got organizations to start supporting this. So we got the Virginia Nurses Association supports the right of patients to have cannabis, the American Nurses Association, the American Public Health Association. The physicians have been a little slower, but the American College of Physicians has come on board. The AMA at least opened up to say, well, we need to be able to do research more easily. But we think the safety is in numbers. And these organizations need to step up to the plate and say, this is safe. I mean, we're giving patients medications that can, you hear the ads all the time, watch out, it could destroy your liver, could destroy your kidneys, you could be suicidal, you could be homicidal on the drug. It goes on and on with the potential side effects of prescribed medications, over-the-counter medications. Tylenol kills people every year.
I heard something about that recently on NPR where people taking the registered dosage were fine, but if you took like one more pill than you... then's on the directions, it can cause liver damage.
Extremely toxic to the liver. And yet cannabis can't. So that's where we keep trying to get the physicians, nurses, look at the evidence. If you see the evidence, you've got to be more vocal and come together. Because as a single voice, yeah, you're threatened. And that's what's happening in a lot of these states where it's legal. Hospital administrators have been telling their healthcare professionals, we don't want you writing recommendations for patients using cannabis. We don't want you talking to patients about them using cannabis. And they're all afraid of some kind of negativity happening from the federal government. I think it's made up. I think it's in their head. But, again, the intimidation is still strong.
Al Byrne and Mary Lynn Mathry here from Patients Out of Time. We talk about medical cannabis. Mary Lynn, you said something about what seemed to be a liver transplant. And telling the doctor, what I heard was, don't test for that, don't write that down. Or does being tested or having positive tests for marijuana use, would that prevent a transplant? And because
yes.
Then I want to go into what else a positive test might, negative, you know, conclusions might come from that.
Yeah. Well, patients sometimes knowingly and oftentimes unknowingly get tested in the hospital for cannabis. We've had pregnant women going in there and getting tested, drug tested, and they come with positive for cannabis. And the next thing you know, Child Protective Services wants to come in and take the baby away. But yeah, many patients, pain contracts is probably the biggest example. Patients who are getting opiates, narcotics for their pain, will have to sign a pain contract. And in that, it includes random drug screens. There's a reason for that makes sense, to make sure the patient is taking the drug prescribed and that they're not taking something that could be dangerous.
A conflicting medicine.
Right. Taking a benzodiazepine, something like Valium or Ativan, could be very dangerous with morphine, Dilaudid, some kind of heavy narcotic. That could be dangerous, and it could result in death. So they want to know that. But there's no need. They don't have to test for cannabis. These screening tests that any hospital use, they can ask for any panel of drugs to be tested. And to an extent, I advise a lot of people, don't bother testing cannabis. It's not going to change your decision in terms of, it's not going to make a difference in their safety, put it that way. So, you know, in a state where it's still illegal under federal law, as a clinician, I think it just makes sense not testing for it.
11:27 on the Wake Up Call, talking about medical cannabis. Al Byrne from Patients Out of Time. As if someone gets tested or a positive test shows up in some manner, does Patients Out of Time, you know, are you aware of what might happen in a negative sense in terms of, do you lose government aid? Can you, you know, have your driver's license taken away? Does the insurance company, even if you don't have a car accident for 6 months, can the insurance company come back and say, hey, you were tested positive 6 months ago, so we're not going to, you know, apply the insurance for you?
Yeah, there's problems. I'll use an example of a neighbor of mine out of Nelson County. He's a two-term Iraq war veteran. He's a Marine, infantryman, who is 100% disabled. He finds that using cannabis helps him with pain and post-traumatic stress. He grew 3 cannabis plants in his backyard and was arrested by the Virginia State Police for doing so. He spent approximately 6 months going to classes, being told he was a bad citizen and that he was a druggie. It cost him thousands and thousands of dollars. He lost his ability to drive for 6 months, which forced him to have his wife, who was pregnant, drive him to Charlottesville, an hour's trip each way for days on end. If he had gone to the Veterans Hospital in Richmond with THC in his urine, he would have been denied his medical treatment until his urine remained clean. Now, I'd like to be clear about this with the veterans. Using cannabis, being found guilty of using cannabis, will not lose a veteran any monetary or financial benefits at all. It won't. It won't happen. What will happen is that you may be denied medical treatment because you use cannabis. Now, this is absurd. Marilyn has discussed how safe this plant material is for the human body. And I'd like to take this opportunity, Rick, to point out something that I have coined the phrase medical treatment by geography. And what I mean by that is, as we've talked today, we know now that there are 20 states, plus the District of Columbia, by the way, where medical cannabis is available to people. And this, of course, includes Washington and Colorado, where it's totally legal. In those states and in the District of Columbia, a veteran going through all the proper state procedures, gets a recommendation from a civilian doctor, uses cannabis therapeutically, he or she will be treated in the veterans facilities of that state and be thanked for their service. I use cannabis medically. If I go to the VA hospital in Richmond and tell them I use cannabis medically, they will escort me off the grounds. This is wrong. There are millions of veterans in 20 states and D.C. that can use cannabis for pain, for phantom pain, for post-traumatic stress, for TBI injuries. And then there are millions of us in places like Virginia, backwater states like Virginia, that hang yellow ribbons from trees and then throw us off the grounds. So, yeah, we have a problem in America, and it's called an injustice, using wounded veterans as guinea pigs. I'd rather use the pigs. I'd like to be able to go to my veterans hospital in Virginia and be treated as a veteran. A friend of mine is in a similar situation in Florida. He was in Vietnam like me. He was wounded. He was in the Army. And he called me there today, a couple of weeks back now, and he said, "Al, when I went to Vietnam, I went to fight for my country, not for Florida. How come just because I live in Florida, they don't treat me like a veteran?" And I'll let your listeners answer that one.
And just in time, we have a caller on line one. Again, 434-979-0919. If you want to participate, caller, are you with us?
That's not my number, but...
No, that's the station number.
Oh.
You want to make a comment for Al and Mary Lynn?
I have a question.
Yes.
Okay, I've been listening to the show, and I did not tune in at the beginning, so you may have already addressed this, but I've been hearing that there's benefits to the use of cannabis as far as, or such as, helping with sleep and pain, but I've known people who have had opposite reactions, where it hypes them up and causes this kind of nerve excitement. Is there different reactions based on a person's metabolism? And if so, are there different strains of cannabis that perhaps address different physiological differences in people?
Well, Mary Lynn, you're nodding your head.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a great question. A lot of what people call stoner pot is really high in THC, and especially the sativa strain is what we call kind of a mind stimulating. So a lot of if people take too much of that, and again, everybody's body is different, reacts a little differently to this, but for a lot of them, it gets them very paranoid and dysphoric. People don't like the feeling. Now, over the years, what we found out in research is there are over 60 cannabinoids in cannabis. CBD, cannabidiol, is one of the 60-plus cannabinoids, but it's one that's getting a lot of attention. It has no psychoactivity. In fact, there's a website called Project CBD, and the purpose of that is to try to educate growers to develop strains of cannabis that are high in CBD. When CBD is in a plant with THC, it actually dampens down the effect, the psychoactive effect of THC. So you've got, you might have, they've developed cannabis that's really, really high in THC and very low in all the other cannabinoids, can be very dysphoric for patients. They've got some cannabis that might be some strains that are high in THC, but if there's a good level of CBD, that will actually modulate the effect of the THC. And then there are other strains that just might be lower in THC. We're finding out that these different cannabinoids have different properties. So, you know, the CBD is really good for anxiety disorder, for depression, for bipolar disorder, for post-traumatic stress symptoms. You know, so very good question. Yeah, one strain does not work for every patient.
11:34 on the wake-up call. Phone lines are open. That was a great question. We hadn't gotten into that earlier. 434-979-0919. Your question for the founding directors of Patients Out of Time, Mary Lynn Mathry and Al Byrne. Call us up.
Support today for WNRN comes from
Maudlin Center for the Arts at the University of Richmond, presenting Sam Bush and Jerry Douglas on Friday, November 8th at 7:30 p.m. Two legends unite on the Camp Concert Hall stage for an evening of bluegrass virtuosity. Details at maudlin.richmond.edu or by calling the Maudlin Center box office at 804-289-8980.
Jess Curry. Jess Curry is at 425 East Main Street on Charlottesville's downtown mall. Jess Curry serves Indo-Caribbean curries with vegetarian options Monday through Saturday, now open for dinner on Friday. You can find Jess Curry on Facebook.
Hi, I'm Roberta Peters, a volunteer tutor from Citizens for Adult Literacy and Learning in Amherst County. We invite you to our walkathon for literacy. The fun starts at 10 a.m. on Saturday, November 9th at Sweetbriar College. The moderate course is about 3 miles long. Two water stations will be available on the course, and refreshments and door prizes will be provided at the end. You can learn more about CALL and pre-register for the Walkathon for Literacy on our website, callamherst.org. I'm Roberta Peters, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you so much for being with us. This is the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, Community Independent Radio, WNRN. Talking about medical cannabis, and let's remind everyone, you can go to that website. Mary Lynn, name of the website?
MedicalCannabis.com.
Just like it, spell it just like it sounds. No trickery in there because somebody else already stole that name.
We got it first.
And you can also, when you go there, there's some, I mean, aside from your, I don't want to say standard, but, you know, your standard website in terms of find out all kinds of information with articles linked back and forth. You can also be educated there more than just reading the articles, correct?
Correct. Physicians, other healthcare professionals as well, but can go to the online continuing education little icon there, and it'll take you to the University of California, San Francisco's School of Medicine's online continuing education program, and they can literally listen or watch our full conference proceedings in from past conferences and earn continuing medical education credits. So there's a way to actually earn your continuing ed credits online through our site, watching leaders from around the world talk about the discovery of the endocannabinoid system or the research on cannabis and its use medically.
Yeah, and I'd like to just add on that, Rick, that as we pointed out, education among the medical doctors in this country is non-existent. We have educated maybe 1,000 of them, but there's a couple of million of them. They need to know what is on this online educational program. Whether or not it's legal in Virginia is sort of immaterial to me as an educator, because there are tens of thousands of Virginians that are using cannabis every day. They go to a doctor or a nurse who knows nothing about it. Senseless. Illegal or legal, these pros, these nurses and docs need to know this stuff. And they don't. And I know they don't, because I know who's taken these courses in America, and I know you haven't, doctor, and you should go online to medicalcannabis.com real quick and take one.
All right. And that's this call.
Oh, good.
From Tommy, because I'm always fascinated by where the callers take us in the conversation. Tommy, you with me?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. First off, I want to thank Al and all the veterans that have, supported our country and served. So first, do that. Thank you so much for your service to our country.
Well, you're very welcome, and I'd like to point out that my wife is also a U.S. Navy veteran, and she served as a Navy nurse during the Vietnam years.
Yeah, and thank her as well. Without the difference of opinions and difference of philosophies, that's kind of what makes our country what it is, I am certainly thankful for your service and hers as well. And so my question is, throughout our history with the United States, we've seen that for laws or bills to even be introduced to the General Assembly and to Congress, that it seems that something has to happen to a member of the General Assembly and or to the members of Congress before they address the issue directly. And what I'm getting at is, do you, through your organization, know of any members of the General Assembly that may have family members that are affected where cannabis could be helpful to them? And, it just kind of seems that if it would directly affect them, then they would be more inclined to pursue legislation that would legalize cannabis, and I'm going back to the military part, for the veterans that are coming back with post-traumatic, that this is such a big issue that's going either under-detected or trying to come up with different ways to help the soldiers. And if this is truly a method or something that could help them, is that what it would take to know somebody that is in the General Assembly that would have a first-hand experience of what the benefits would be? And if so, are y'all able to research that or contact those people to see if that would certainly be a way to get more attention to the issue that would be more helpful? And I don't know if there's any way you can answer that question, but just what I had thinking there.
Well, yeah.
Thanks, Tommy.
Thank you, Rick.
It's a good thought, and frankly, to answer your question, yes, Mary Lynn and I, over the years here in Virginia, and those that we work with here in Virginia, have been in contact with quite a few legislators, actually, who were ill, or who's had a loved one that was ill, and when they discovered that cannabis was helpful, all of a sudden they became our friends. A notable example of that was the late Senator Emily Kirk, the sister of the lady on TV that we're all familiar with. And Emily Kirk died, I believe, of pancreatic cancer. And we went to her and explained to her how it would be helpful. Whether or not she used cannabis or not, I'm not going to, say. But, they get real excited and they get real interested when it's them. And that's unfortunate, because as a Navy officer, I was interested not in me, but in my men. And I think that politicians should not be interested in me, but us. And, I work with them when they come to us, of course. But I've always asked them, how come now? How come you didn't come when somebody else was sick?
That is a good question, and I think that's what we're trying to wake people up to, the fact that sooner or later, if it's not you that needs cannabis, it's going to be your mother, your father, your sister, your brother, your child. Someone needs it. That Sanjay Gupta show, I think one of the great things he did was he brought out one of the examples for a patient was a 6-year-old girl, a twin, She happened to suffer from what's called Dravet syndrome, which is a terrible seizure disorder among kids. I really don't know that much about it, but terrible seizure disorder. Really, really difficult to control. This girl had 300 seizures a week. If you saw her, she was undeveloped. She could not talk properly. She could not walk properly. Well, her twin sister was a fine, healthy, young six-year-old. Parents were going crazy. Physicians were trying everything they could. The drugs were very toxic. So she tried cannabis. What they found was a high CBD. Again, the cannabinoid that's not psychoactive, but a strain with high CBD. They gave her that from the instant she had the cannabis in her. No more seizures. No negative side effects. Within the next week, one seizure. That's a miracle. But again, it's putting balance back into her body.
Mary Lynn, talking about the Dr. Sanjay Gupta's article, which I think you can also find his discussion on YouTube.
You can see the special show he did called Weed. If you go YouTube and put Sanjay Gupta CNN Weed, it'll come up.
Why I Changed My Mind on Weed is the article. And it is. It's fascinating to watch people who, for whatever reason, had been against it for some purpose, because it had no medical use, because they had been socially trained that it's a bad thing. So let me jump to that real quick. The social discussion about it. There, I think originally we can go to California, the Proposition 215, is that the right one?
Yes.
And so once it's passed and the use of cannabis in a medical sense is allowed, many people say, well, look, you've taken it and you've gone too far with it. When a doctor, it's so easy to get the prescription for it. The prescription is used not for for those under chemotherapy. It's used for people who are having a bad day and a headache. Does that sort of thing deter what Patients Out of Time and other organizations are trying to make acceptable on a national sense medically?
It used to. I think that that has been overtaken by science. We refer back here in this subject to the endocannabinoid system. Now, this is a system, as Mary Lynn said, that is present in the human body, but it's also present in every living creature except insects. You have a dog, your dog has an endocannabinoid system. You have a horse, a snake, a sponge at sea has an under endocannabinoid system. So this system has receptors, as Mary Lynn said, throughout our body. That's our brain, our heart, our lungs, our skeleton, and our skin. I used to wonder, frankly, when we started in this business in the early 80s, why cannabis was so effective on migraine headaches and glaucoma into ocular pressure. How could it possibly heal up these skin cancers and still be effective as a antiemetic? And now we know. The answer is the endocannabinoid system. The most famous researcher in the world on cannabis, the grandfather of medical cannabis, is Dr. Raphael Meshulam of Israel. And Dr. Meshulam has said very plainly and openly that he believes that the plant compound of cannabis and the compounds of the endocannabinoid system of the human beings and everything else happens just by serendipity. There's no real reason for it, but this plant became a plant that could produce the same compounds as my horse. And this is why we now see in the United States and other places this wide-ranging use of cannabis. And when the cops come up and say, well, you know, this guy just got a recommendation for cannabis because he's got headaches, what's all that about? I mean, that's just crap. Well, it's not. Cannabis is very effective for migraines and other headaches. It's effective for all kinds of pain. And pain is what the patient says it is, not what a cop says it is. So, I think, again, Rick, what we're dealing with here is a knowledge base that is held very well by patients and very loosely by medical doctors.
You know, since 2000, we put on a biennial conference series, and we bring researchers from around the world. And we're always amazed. Every time we have a conference, we walk away and go, oh, my goodness, I can't believe that. Well, the last conference was 2012 in Tucson, and we had a researcher, Gary Wenk, PhD from Ohio, And he does research with animals on trying to figure out about Alzheimer's disease. And his lab, the research they're showing, it certainly indicates this is going to be true for humans. A puff is enough. In other words, an inhalation of cannabis could be enough to prevent Alzheimer's. So when you talk to people about, you know, well, let's go back. Dennis Perrone, a fellow who started one of the biggest cannabis buyers clubs back in California when it first became legal, made a statement that all use is medical use, and people laughed about that. Granted, many people are just using it to relax, and they're using it socially. But when you understand cannabis and how nourishing it is to the body, it actually might be medical use. It could prevent somebody from getting a problem with glaucoma. We're looking at these autoimmune diseases that people who use it or ingest it at some point to feed their body may never develop, such things as Lou Gehrig's disease, multiple sclerosis, lupus, arthritis. So, you know, we just keep pushing this plant because it's really, really good, not only for humans, but for the full environment. And, you know, off topic is hemp. But think about hemp. They're now building some homes made of what's called hempcrete. And the beauty of this material is it's mold resistant. Just think about that, having your home that's mold resistant to be in a healthier environment.
I'd like to pick up on something just for a minute that Marilyn said. One puff is enough for Alzheimer's. And that also is one vaporization is enough. And I'd also like to point out, look, cannabis can be applied now in any number of ways. It can be applied topically. There's an oromucosal spray, meaning you take a little spray thing and you put it in your mouth and the liquid is absorbed by your tongue and your cheeks just like it would be absorbed in your lungs, but again, no smoke, it's a spray. We have suppositories that have cannabis in them. We have chewing gum with cannabis. Now the other thing that's become available here in the last year or so is because we have been able to remove the THC compound from the cannabis plant, we now have tinctures and other products that have no psychoactive results from them at all. Nothing. Except there's great clinical therapeutic value from this plant. And you can buy these products. They'll mail them to you from Colorado. Go online, check it out. Look up things like medical cannabis oil or medical cannabis tincture. You can buy these tinctures. They are very concentrated format. I use one, right now I'm using one to put little drop on skin cancers that I have. My dermatologist knows I use this stuff. And what he's amazed about is that he's not so amazed that the cancer cells are killed and go away. What he's amazed about is that these cells around the cancer cells aren't disturbed or harmed in any way. And of course they shouldn't be because it's a compound that is already in my body that I'm just putting on in a concentrated fashion.
You know, one comment about that too is the endocannabinoid system, when it's functioning properly, it literally helps take care of cancer in most humans. Zal said it kills it. What cannabis does and the endocannabinoid system does, recognizes a cancer cell that's an aberrant cell. It's not a healthy cell, and it starts a chemical process that literally makes the cell commit suicide. It's a cell suicide. And it's because it's not functioning well. And that's what we're finding. You put that in a concentrate on skin cancers and it literally kills the cells. We've had physicians totally amazed by doing surgery on a patient with a tumor. They've been taking the oil. And, in particular, there was a patient down in Florida and the surgeon came out to talk to the family saying it was the most amazing thing I ever saw. We took the tumor out, but it was full of dead cells. And they just smiled at each other and kind of went, well, we know why, because they had been giving her this cannabis oil ahead of time.
11:52 on the wake-up call. Fascinating conversation about medical cannabis with our guests today, Al Byrne and Marilyn Mathry from Patients Out of Time.
Our members are joined by the following underwriters in their support of WNRN.
The Jefferson Theater, presenting Sweetwater with Dave Sayer, Saturday, October 26th. Formed in Charlottesville, this once country band Sweetwater has mixed in Southern and classic rock, Motown, and some R&B. Tickets for the October 26th show are at jeffersontheater.com. Sweetwater, Saturday at the Jefferson Theater.
And whether you're an iPhone or an Android user, it's easy to get WNRN on your phone. For Android users, we recommend the TuneIn app, which is available at Google Play. WillowTree Apps has created the WNRN iPhone app, which you can find at the App Store or at WNRN.org. Just click on Listen to download the app. All right, just a few minutes left. You're welcome to call up with a question of your own here in the last 6 minutes today as we talk about medical cannabis, Mary Lynn Mathry and Al Byrne. So we think patients out of time, obviously an optimistic group trying to look forward to the day when medically cannabis is available to all, with still research going on about various ways it can be used. What is your vision about how it's grown, how it's dispensed within the U.S. if federal law says, fine, go at it?
The vision I would love to see is that, the prohibition ends. Anyone could grow this plant in their garden because it is such a healthy vegetable. When it comes to patients, they need it as medicine. So there should be medicines available everywhere. But before that happens, I would see biology classes in high school, including the endocannabinoid system, so that everyone learns about this system. Every medical school and nursing school to have courses that teach people about the endocannabinoid system, healthcare professionals. It's such a vital part of our being, our well-being, since it is the master of keeping us healthy. They need to know about it. And then they would also be taught about cannabis so that everyone would have this basic knowledge. We would be including it in our diet. Right now, everyone can be eating hemp seed oil products. Very nutritious.
As far as growing it, medical cannabis has to be grown very carefully. It's not something you just grow. We've talked a little bit about, there's hundreds of strains now that have been identified and codified, and we pretty much know what's in them and what they're good for. But all of this cannabis is going to be taken into human bodies. It has to be clean. We have to have it verified. We have to have it tested. We want to know what's in it. We want to know what's on it. No pesticides, no insecticides, no fungicides, all of that stuff. So, there's a whole world out there of horticulture yet to be developed, thousands if not hundreds of thousands of jobs in this industry of growing this plant. And as Mary Lynn says, that's the medical cannabis side. There'll be other people that will grow recreational cannabis, and there'll be people, fortunately, that sooner or later will get back to growing hemp again. But the way it's dispensed, I would hope, as Mary Lynn says, that every adult can have some cannabis in their backyard, just like I can have 200 gallons of wine in my backyard.
And when it comes to recreational use, that is the argument in Colorado that literally, I think, really helped change the vote, was marijuana is safer. And the point they were trying to say is, yeah, alcohol is available for adults to use. You know, and when used in moderation, it's a fine thing. No problems for most people. You can live a healthy life with it. But we also consume cigarettes. There's not much healthy thoughts about smoking cigarettes. But the point they were saying is adults should have the ability to make a choice of something that's safer than either of those, that's not as toxic, that doesn't lead to crime, that doesn't lead to violence. So from the world of people just looking for something to relax, it is a safe choice. And I'm talking about this from an addictions perspective. The more in places where it is legal, they're calling it, instead of a gateway drug, they call it the exit drug, literally helping people get off of alcohol, get off of tobacco, get off methamphetamine, cocaine, opiates. Patients in methadone clinics who have trouble with opiates, whether it be heroin or prescription drugs, use methadone to stabilize their life, but they're stuck on that medication for a long time. They've been using cannabis to get off the methadone.
One of the interesting things I found looking at the website, www.medicalcannabis.com, one of the pages in there talked about the organizations who are supporting access. Now, you have a couple different things who are supporting the legalization, et cetera, but just supporting access to this included medical groups, specific cities, and church organizations. I saw United Methodist Church there.
I found that to be...
Oh, B'nai B'rith women, Methodist Church, Unitarians.
But they get it. It's about compassion. And this is God's plan. If anybody wakes up, this is God's plan.
Yeah, I ask people in religion all the time that say cannabis is, there's something wrong with cannabis. I said, you mean God messed this one up, huh? Just this one.
Al Byrne and Mary Lynn Mathery from Patients Out of Time, a locally founded organization working on education for medical cannabis throughout the country and throughout the world. Again, what is your, we talked for a minute about your hopes. What are your realistic expectations? Do you see the FDA approving this drug? We've already seen some changes by state. Do you see some change federally? We saw where the U.S. Attorney General sort of softened some of the federal laws, but not for medical purposes.
The drug war is a jobs program for cops. That's what it is. And what is the resistance now is all the law enforcement people sitting on all these committees saying you can't have medical cannabis because it's not medicine. What they really are saying is you can't change these laws because I don't want to have a job. I don't have an easy job arresting kids that are just sitting around smoking a joint.
And our prisons are full of people with drug charges, and our prisons are now a private industry.
But do you see a change, or how far ahead? We only got a couple seconds left before you see a change on a federal level.
I see a change, and you'll see it happening. New England is almost all now legal. New York will probably pass pretty quick. So will Pennsylvania. A lot of states have it on the ballot.
How far before it comes south?
Florida, maybe next.
Florida, we're working on real hard. Texas actually has some people, that's a big surprise, but they've got some people moving there now to get it. So it's wake up, folks. This is a plant for every one of us, and it's going to affect you some way in your life positively if you allow it into your life.
I heard recently men, 1 in 2 chance of getting some form of cancer.
And this kills cancer cells.
All right. Again, our guest today, Mary Lynn Mathery, registered nurse. And president of Patients Out of Time, Al Byrne, former, well, I guess both of you, veterans, and Al, secretary treasurer. Thank you both for coming on today.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you very much for having us.
All right. Next week, let's see what I have for next week. Oh, I have the director of a documentary film. Dave Miller will come on to talk about his film, Breathing Life into the Chesapeake. We'll be talking about the oystermen and environmental issues. I hope you'll be here with us. Thanks, folks.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Brandon Wong. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.